Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome along to the first in a very, very special series of interviews with Scotland's Lions, brought to you by the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. In today's episode, Alan sits down with one half of the two most famous brothers to ever play for Scotland. Scott Hastings talks about his two tours for the Lions and a whole host of other things in between. While I've got you here and we're talking about the Lions, we could not recommend more thoroughly the book, This Is Your Everest. It documents the 1997 Lions tour, the famous win down in South Africa, as told by the players who were on the tour. It is an absolute banging read. You can get yourself a copy on the Polaris Publishing website, so type that into Google. We will also put the link in the show notes for the pod and all over our social channels. That is This Is Your Everest from Polaris Publishing. But now, sit down and enjoy this episode. Alan and Scott Hastings. Cheers.
Absolutely delighted to have Scottish and Lions legend Scott Hastings on the line. How are you? How's your day been?
Yeah, fantastic. It's great to see some great weather across Scotland at the moment, albeit that we could do with some more blue sky rather than the heavy cloud that's come over. But no, it's good to put the shorts on, be outside. And I actually got a run in today, so I was delighted with that. Still exercising, trying to keep healthy. That's the main thing.
Absolutely delightful. You're not playing any sort of touch rugby or anything?
No, those days are well past me now.
And I'm going to see, are you involved with the 2021 Lions at all, either from sort of a broadcast perspective?
So not from a broadcast. Sky are covering that, but there's some famous Scotsman involved. I don't know if you've heard of him, Sir Ian McGeachan. I think he's kind of got the gig ahead of me. But
I heard of that guy.
But, you know, isn't it wonderful that the Lions ahead? And yes, I was meant to be going out to South Africa. I was hosting a touring party with a company called Black Obel. And one of the guys who's a director there is Gladstone Small, the ex-England cricketer. And I was really looking forward to going to South Africa. We had a fabulous itinerary, some brilliant clients. And unfortunately, under the sort of overall umbrella of Lions Rugby Travel, Black Obel were one of the official suppliers of tours to the British and Irish Lions. All tours have been suspended, postponed, cancelled. And, you know, as far as we know, that the Lions will play in front of empty stadiums. Now, there is a hope that there will be some supporters there, but we'll wait and see. So I'm afraid I'm going to be watching from afar, but when the Lions come to Edinburgh in a few weeks' time, I'll hopefully be at Murrayfield as well to watch and be entertained.
Yeah, it's absolutely devastating, not only just because of the rugby, but ultimately South Africa is just such an amazing country. Were you out in 2009? at all?
I was, actually, and hosted a fantastic tour. And it was just an amazing experience. And, of course, having been a player in 1989 and 2000, and, sorry, 1993, I should say, to then go back and host these tours, it's been fabulous to see the other side, the fan side. And, you know, it's certainly grown from my time. And, you know, every 4 years when the Lions comes around, the buzz not only around selection but in the build-up to the tour is wonderful. And it kind of it piques your interest back in the game. Everybody gets involved in debating who the Lions squad or the test team's going to be. And you suddenly look back and go, hey, I was once a Lion. And it's really special. It really is special. And I treasure those times when I was part of that famous, famous tour in 89 and 93. And to wear that jersey, it was just fantastic.
Well, I guess going back to sort of 1989, and I guess you sort of talked a little bit about that buzz. I guess as you sort of went through the 1988 Five Nations, and obviously more so the 1989 Five Nations, was the Lions kind of prominent in your mind?
It was. You were conscious of the fact that you needed a strong season. And, of course, the Lions in those days were still on a touring schedule of playing every 3 years. And the 3 years previous to that, they were due to go to South Africa, but because of apartheid, the tour was called off. And the Lions played two games, I believe, against a World 15. And I wasn't selected for that. That was my debut season for Scotland in 1986. And therefore, when 89 came on the radar, it was kind of a... It was on the back of the 87 Rugby World Cup for me that had been so disappointing. I'd been injured during the Rugby World Cup and only played a very short period of match time. So I knew 89 was the next kind of hurdle to try and get to. And to be selected was fantastic. Scotland had a strong season actually that season, and I felt pretty confident. When that letter came through and my brother Gavin was also selected, it was very, very special because I've also got an older brother who actually still to this day lives in Melbourne. So the fact is that we were able to be with him as well, and my mother and father travelled over, and it was just, as brothers to be on the same tour was just extraordinary. And then to play in the test team, it capped all and everything that was going on. It was all encompassing within our lives and an exciting time.
No, absolutely. And I guess how far in advance of the tour did you find out back then?
So, David, I think, gone are the days of watching live on television or getting a text. I don't think we even had a mobile phone in those days. No, we got a letter from the committee of the four home unions that came through by the post, and we had to wait for the post to come through, and the phone call started going, I suppose, when I was in the office because I was working for an advertising agency at that moment in time. And, slowly but surely the news got out, and there was a number of, obviously, Scots from the Lions, headed by, of course, Finn Calder, who was the captain. We had Sir Ian McGeachan, as a coach. So it was an exciting time. And because it was the first major tour to Australia, there was questions being asked about whether it was a strong enough itinerary for the Lions. And, of course, it proved to be a very strong itinerary, not as strong as going to New Zealand or South Africa, or even to this day and age where I think every fixture is really special. I'm not decrying the fact that it wasn't special, but there was still that, Queensland B in Cairns was kind of a dead cert win. So yeah. you could enjoy yourself off the pitch as much as on it.
It's, you sort of mentioned right at the start, McGeachan, who is obviously now sort of a bit of a Lions legend, but I guess at the time was a relatively young coach. Did you expect him to sort of be sort of jettisoned into that sort of top role that early?
Yeah, because it was interesting because I actually came through the Anglo-Scots network, into my senior rugby because I was a student down in Newcastle, and Geach was involved then with the Anglo-Scots. So I first came across Geach then, and of course he then took the backs when I was first captain in 1986. So I developed a great rapport with Ian coming through 86, 87, 88, and of course to go on tour 89. He was a bit of a sort of revolutionary coach, a real visionary. He just pressed the right emotional buttons, and And I remember some of our training sessions at the time, you know, the Welsh and Irish players and English players, they couldn't believe that the variation, the skills that he would, you know, impose upon us. And I always remember watching Robert Jones at the end of a day writing down the sessions, because he was going to take that back to his club back in Wales. And, of course, the Welsh players were learning from McGeechan, who, as I said, had this vision in his coaching, and he was an extraordinary man. And, you know, so he's gone on to prove, you know, even to this day, that his insight into the game is rather special.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It sort of essentially sort of transcends lines now. And it's, I guess, with him and Finlay Calder, what was their relationship like at Scotland level?
Well, of course, Finlay didn't captain Scotland. He did captain Scotland, and sort of was the outsider to come in with the Lions. And you know, the great thing is there was a good rapport. But Finlay was a wonderful captain because he embraced everybody in that touring squad, and because McGeechan had been on tours himself, he knew how the Lions could react both on and off the pitch, and he knew that the harmony was really important on the tour. Now, he also had Roger Utley alongside him again, who had toured with Ian as well. And so that understanding, all the players who were on the tour knew that these guys had real credentials in terms of that Lions background. And we had a fantastic manager, Clive Rowlands, again, a former Welsh player, a former British and Irish Lion himself, who talked passionately every day about the British Lions badge and what it meant, not only to him, but to thousands of, you know, families and people involved and steeped in rugby. The Lions was just this unique, unique occasion. And I think he lit the touch paper for the Lions and for what it now stands for. And if you spoke to any British and Irish Lion or anybody's pulled on that famous jersey, they will buy into that ethos that it was one of the most special occasions. And that was never lost on us on that tour. Whether you were at a dinner, a function, or out, representing the four home unions, that badge was so important. And Clive Rowlands, Roger Utley and Ian McGeechan, they set the standard. But Finlay Calder as captain just brought everybody together, and it was a harmonious tour.
I guess, you know, talk about sort of building that cohesion and driving the ethos. Was there any opportunity before you actually got on the plane to Australia to meet up, or was actually when you met in the airport, was that the first time the whole group got together?
We had a training weekend down at the Oaklands Park Hotel in London, Surrey, Weybridge in Surrey, that the first sort of squad get together. We got measured up for our kit, etc. And the players went out and we trained and we sort of set the pattern. Yes, we had a few beers. We ate together. We had a strong, you know, we set the ethos of the tour in many respects. But what happened after that was that the Scotland players realised that we had an opportunity to, because our season had finished, or basically our club season had finished, the Welsh, Irish and English players were still sort of still playing knockout competitions in their leagues and cup competition. So the Scottish players decided to embark upon some extra training, and we went into a sort of almost a 4-week cycle, supported by Dougie Morgan himself, a former Lion himself, sadly who passed away a couple of years ago, and the boys in the Borders, they met up at John Jeffrey's farm, and they heard that the Edinburgh boys were, you know, putting in more sessions, and the Anglo-Scottish guys who had been selected on the tour, likes of Derek White and Damien Cronin, they were doing extra sessions, and that kind of spun off so that when we met back again to get our kit and photograph, there was a real rivalry and competition, not only amongst the Scots, but across the whole of the squad, that we had to get fitter. So, you know, we were away on tour for 8 weeks down in Australia. And that was a time when you became a professional rugby player in those amateur days, and it was just as I said, a joyous occasion to get involved in, because you learnt so much about your roommates, your fellow players, the rivalries, and it was good fun looking back. And we've had a couple of reunions since then, the '89 tour, and it was fabulous.
Wonderful. I guess you sort of talked a little bit about rivalries. I think what Will Carling was injured going into the tour, but I guess how did you sort of weigh up your chances of getting into that kind of, I think at the time, the sort of starting 21?
It was interesting because there was at least what, 6-7 games before we got into the first test match. And therefore, you had plenty of chance on the training pitch and when you played your games to force the issue. But my early memory of playing for the Lions was we weren't thinking about the test team. We weren't, part of it. And in the lead up to the first test, I actually tweaked a hamstring. So I sort of withdrew my name from selection. And then I was under the cosh because the Lions lost that opening test. I had to then play in the midweek team against the Australian Capital Territories and came away having had quite a strong comeback game. Obviously, from what I can gather, I was part of the dialogue for the first test team, but because I withdrew, Mike Hall and Brendan Mullen played in the centre. And they decided to bring in myself and Jeremy Guskett, who had played well together during the tour. And once we'd won that second test, we weren't a shoo-in. We were always, as a full squad of players, we were always pushing each other to sort of improve. And we all felt we had a responsibility to win a test series, whether you were in the test team or not. And I think that was where part of the harmony came from, where we had a fantastic midweek captain called Donald Lennon. And he led that midweek team, but a few of the players realised they weren't going to get into the test team, but they were going to contribute as much as they can to the tour, and so it proved. So yeah, my thoughts really weren't on the tests early days, but again, when you look back and people in the media and the surround, they kind of go, did you play a test match? Well, it doesn't matter. I was an 89 line, I was a 93 line. Whether I played in a test match or not, didn't really. You look back and yes, it was with pride I played in a test match. But at the end of the day, I was part of a whole tour. And that's lost sometimes in these days.
Yeah, no, completely agree. And I was actually looking back at some of the highlights of sort of the second and third test, and I saw sort of early on in that second test, there was a bit of a mass brawl sort of kicked off. Did you sort of stand back, or did you sort of JPR Williams in just kind of the had sort of?
Listen, I was having a wee chat with Jeremy Guskett at the time because we were backs, right? We're not going to get involved in that rough and tumble stuff, and we let the forwards just absolutely let rip. And the reason it's called the Battle of Ballymore was it was a pretty feisty match, it really was. So, I was one of these guys that you hit hard on a tackle, you made sure you were, physical within all the exchanges around the ruck and maul area and the tackle area. And it was an incredible game. I think, rather embarrassingly, I think when you look back, it was a hodgepodge of rugby and styles. But at the end of the day, that was what it was, and what a victory it was, and a brilliant. I remember being involved in the lead up to the try that took the Lions into lead, scored by my brother Gavin, and then for Jeremy Guskett to dink a grubber kick through and score to seal the victory was to honestly save the tour and square the Test series 1-1 was a fantastic occasion, and it kept the tour alive, and it had the whole squad absolutely buzzing. And when Clive Rowlands talked about that badge, being bigger and bigger, that's what it meant. To win an Alliance jersey was very special.
And I guess then sort of shifting on to the sort of third test going in sort of 1-1, was it sort of the week leading up to it? Did you have a midweek game in between the second and third test?
I haven't got my tour itinerary.
I've got it actually up here.
I believe we did.
And I guess in terms of sort of Guskett, obviously that combination sort of carried it through to the third test. How did you find playing with him?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He was great. He was a Rolls Royce of a centre and undoubtedly had class. He'd just been capped by England playing against Romania and scored on debut as well. So he was really coming into his four then. It was a great relationship I felt we had, but also we had Ian Evans, for example, and we had Rory Underwood on one wing. And there was a real sort of, these guys were fantastic rugby players. Rob Andrew came in for Craig Chalmers. You had Robert Jones at scrum half. And then Wade Dooley was fantastic. Mike Teague, Finlay Calder. It was just a great, great side. Feisty Brian Moore was just a revelation. But by goodness, that final test match was on an absolute knife edge. And, the final few minutes were just fraught. And Australia, they threw everything at us. And what people forget is that whilst the Lions won that test series, Australia showed, A, that they could host a major tour, but B, they came back 2 years later with the Campeses, the Liners, and they won, and the Nick Farr-Jones, for example, and they won the Rugby World Cup in 1991. So it was no fluke that they were on the upward curve, and they were a magnificent team, and they played some stunning rugby against the Lions. They absolutely whipped the Lions in the first test. So for the Lions, first time ever, to come back and win a series from behind was pretty unique, and that's what makes it special, and that's what goes down in the history books.
I love that photo of, I think it's after the third test, where I think it's yourself, Guscott, Finlay Calder, McGeachin and David Sowell, and you're all black and white having beers. Guscott's got a cigarette in his hand.
Somebody posted that the other day, didn't they, on social media, and I just couldn't. It just goes to show, the changing times of an international dressing room. The fact that somebody's having a fag next year, I forgive him.
Yeah, and I guess sort of shifting across to the 93 tour, sort of going into New Zealand. Did you feel different at all going into that tour?
Yeah, I was a bit nervous. And you also knew going into New Zealand, into that Lions den in many respects, the tour was just going to be totally different. The game had moved on 4 years. We'd had a Rugby World Cup under our belt in 1991. New Zealand was always going to be an awesome prospect. But the excitement going into that tour was fantastic. And of course, my brother Gavin was selected as the captain. And there was a bit of rivalry there with him vying for that captaincy alongside Will Carling. But when the announcement came out that Gavin and I were touring again, we're the only pair of brothers to have ever toured with the British and Irish Lions on two tours. It was yet again another proud moment. And, what a rivalry that was, because, we, as I mentioned, the Lions, after the Lions season, Scotland won a Grand Slam. England had responded with their own Grand Slam in that 1991 season. And we then had a World Cup. By that time, England were a dominating force. So, it was 93 was just, another step up. And certainly the tour was full of intensity. And, I always remember I'd been picked for the opening game against Northland, and we pulled into the stadium, having been in New Zealand for a week. I was playing in the opening game. And, there's 20,000 spectators already in the ground an hour before kickoff. And you just knew it was on a different plateau altogether.
For that tour in New Zealand, I know you sort of talked quite fondly about sort of the cohesion you had in that 89 tour. Was it similar sort of vibe in the 93 tour?
So it was. And it's a fascinating dynamic. And the rivalries were still there. And as the tour went on, the Lions got beaten for the first time against Otago the week out from the first test match. And the cracks kind of started to appear around about then. I was injured in that match. I had a bad injury trying to tackle Josh Cronfeld. And his knee caught my face, and basically I smashed my cheekbone and broke my jaw in two places. And my tour was over. Wade Dooley had some devastating news where his father had passed away, so he had to leave the tour. And also Martin Bayfield had got a bad injury. Will Carling had been carted off. It was a bit of a car crash the week before the test match. We had to go down and play a game against Southland, and you know, the Lions then went into that first test match, and everything had been going really well. And suddenly, you know, a couple of refereeing decisions went against the team, and Grant Fox kicked a last-minute goal to deny the Lions a famous victory. But that time I was kind of, you know, after that test match, I was on my way home. And, you know, I then watched the series, you know, unravel from home. And by the time the Lions squared the series 1-1, of course, the midweek team realised they were never going to get a chance of represent the Lions in a test match. So the focus then became the test team. And the midweek team kind of went off the rails a little bit, and people were a bit despondent. I think those were the sort of jealousies kicked in. And it's a shame that the tour will always be remembered for some poor performances. And the finger pointed at a number of Scottish players on that tour. You know, there was some inconsistency perhaps in selection, but, you know, the Lions will always throw up some anomalies. And it was just a shame from Gavin's perspective that he was part of a tour. But, you know, with the last match on tour against the New Zealand, the Lions were still within 3 points of a famous victory over the All Blacks and to win a series out there. So it wasn't far away from being a good tour. But because the midweek team then lost, the Saturday team lost, it just became... It was a tough environment from what I can gather. But because I really wasn't there, I was looking from afar. We've not had a get-together, and it's a shame. I think it would be great if that 1993 team could get together, because I think some of the frustrations of that tour could be put there. You know, we're all old enough. And, you know, I've met a number of my fellow tourists at various functions and dinners, and, you know, we still get on well with each other.
It probably goes back a little bit to your point as well at the beginning, where I imagine, you know, at the time the sort of Australia and New Zealand national teams were at a similar level, but that depth of kind of quality at club level in New Zealand is always just been that little bit higher, which just makes those midweek games that bit harder. And I think if you say you start to get injuries, I imagine that just playing that sort of every sort of 3 days sort of grind you down a little bit as a team.
Yeah, you know, very few international teams continue to tour now. And, you know, when I played, you know, you were literally in three locations across a period of 7 or 8 days. So that meant checking in hotels, getting ready on buses, on flights, and it was just relentless. And if you're not winning your midweek matches and then you lose your Saturday matches and then you lose another midweek match and then you lose another Saturday match, suddenly, with the squad not having won for 2 weeks, that builds pressure. And teams have to adapt to pressure. And unfortunately, on that particular tour, the focus went into the Saturday team, the test team, and the midweek team felt as though they were kind of left out in the shadows a bit, because you know, the coaches, I think, spent a little bit more time on trying to get the test team ready and prepared. But, you know, we can all, you know, we can't change the past. That's what we tried to do to get a winning test series, and you know, it didn't happen. But one of the special things, David, I remember is that, you know, very few photographs and videos kind of exist from that tour. So the memories of the 89 and 93 tours are still pretty special. Whereas the fly on the wall documentary, Living with the Lions in 97, you could see what it meant and how special it was. But for me, those memories are mine. They're nobody else's. And that's what makes my Lions experience all the better.
Yeah. Oh, can't imagine. It's, I guess, you know, obviously both tours captained by Scotsmen. You know, I won't ask you to sort of rate them, given obviously family allegiances, but I guess can you give us a bit of sense of the kind of what were sort of the differences or potentially similarities between Gavin and Finlay as captains?
It's pretty hard, you know, especially when your brother's the captain. You know, you get very difficult to kind of criticise them. And as I said, I think going into that first test, there'd been a tremendous harmony within the team. And it was just the fact that when the squad and the team squared that test series to go one all and win in Wellington, what an achievement that was. It was a fantastic achievement. But then the cracks appeared and it was kind of disappointing. But because I wasn't there, I can't really compare like with like. And therefore, my experience of being on the whole tour in 89 was the fact that Finlay just was, he was able to just engage with everybody. And, you know, Gavin, I think, you know, had his own, you know, injury worries going into that second test. And, you know, I'm not defending him because I just don't know enough about what happened because I wasn't there. But as you go through the Lions cycle, that 97 tour to South Africa, that was the fly on the wall documentary, Living with the Lions, which was a fantastic tour. And then you go to the last two tours, captained by Sam Warburton. You know, they were awesome experiences for those players. And in between times, some Scottish players who were involved in Lions tours didn't enjoy the experience. Now, that's sad from my perspective. If players didn't enjoy their Lions experience, I find that very sad. But undoubtedly, winning helps. Simple as that. Winning helps. And, you know, if you're competitive and you've given your all, then, you know, you take the plaudits. But unfortunately, when you're under pressure and you've lost games, it's hard. It's hard when you're representing such a famous set of fans, a famous set of jerseys, a famous set of players, and a fantastic brand.
No, absolutely. And I guess, you obviously, you continued to play for Scotland up until 1997. Was the Lions Tour in 97 something that you were aiming for, was on your radar?
It was, but kind of things started slipping that season. You know, a lot of the rugby league boys were coming back, and Alan Tate and Scott Gibbs and Jonathan Davis were starting to put pressure on the rugby union. And they brought a freshness and a zest and a professionalism into that kind of setup. And I had a mixed season. I was dropped by Scotland, and I knew my chance had gone in 97. I took a bad injury then. I'd captained the Scotland Sevens team to qualification in the Rugby World Cup Sevens out in Hong Kong. But you know, a couple of weeks before, I got injured. And cut a long story short, I actually ended up on a Scotland development tour to South Africa, called in as a late replacement. So I actually attended that final Lions test match
at
Ellis Park. It was a magic occasion. It was an amazing week of touring with Scotland, because it was actually, I think, the toughest tour I have ever had in my life, because not only did I play two games coming back from injury, but we had 3 6 o'clock in the morning starts, and I only got to bed at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I'm assuming they're probably not going to be able to get away with any of that behaviour on this tour, or no, I don't think they have done for a while.
And that's it. And it's going to be really interesting how Warren Gatland and his team kind of create this amazing atmosphere when there's no fans, they're not even allowed out their bubble. It's a shame for all sport that, you know, we talked earlier on there, David, about the Olympics and the impact that has, and the impact of Wimbledon and, you know, the European Championships for football being played, you know, with some fans, but not all fans. It just, the Lions, without its colour, without its fans, without its supporters, you know, 50,000 supporters, you know, cramming Cape Town, Joburg, Pretoria, Durban, all these places, cramming it out, having the time of their lives. It's such a shame that it wasn't going ahead with all its colour and glory.
And I guess you obviously play quite a lot with Townsend for Scotland.
Yeah.
I guess, what do you think, you know, he's going to be able to sort of bring to that attack? And I guess, B, how do you think he'll work with Gatland?
I think he'll work very well. Undoubtedly, I think the fact that Steve Tandy, the defence, Scotland defence coach, and Gregor were there when there was a selection meeting going on, you know, ensured that there was another voice for the eight Scots that are on the tour. And what I'd love to see is these guys absolutely grow, you know, into their, you know, into their jerseys and really excel as Lions players. And they have the opportunity to do so. But, you know, Gregor's been a canny coach. You've got to remember that he had a poor Rugby World Cup. He had embarked on his, you know, his coaching career with trying to play one of the most fast, expansive games, high-tempo games. And, you know, Scotland were making ridiculous mistakes in the first few minutes of games and falling out of games within the first 20 minutes. And what Townsend's been able to do, he knew he got things wrong in Japan and he turned it around. He knew he had the players. He just had to get the structures right. And I felt that the loose approach to his game cost Scotland on numerous occasions. But what he's brought is an understanding and a tighter game plan, which he's able to ensure that his pack dominate, but also the team are innovative. And he's not afraid to bring in players like Sam Johnson, like DTH Van der Merwe. He's got Hogg, the attacking talent. He's not afraid to throw Finn Russell out the camp, bring him back in and prepare to work with him. So there's been some major decisions where over the last couple of years, he's adapted well. And it's great to see. And Gregor was always a thinker on the pitch and off the pitch, and he's continued to have that sort of innovation. And he's like a good bottle of whiskey, I suppose. He's maturing with age.
That's potentially a nice way to sort of end it. Actually, I guess before we go, what is your sort of prediction for the Lions tour?
It's bizarre, isn't it? Because South Africa have not played a single game since that Rugby World Cup win. And it's almost unthinkable. Even when you say that, David, the Lions, of course, they've never played. So I just think it's the most fascinating battle in sport, isn't it? And I would just love to see the Lions win this one. I really would. But, oh, my goodness, South Africa are a mighty team. So come on, the Lions. I think it would be lovely at the end of the day with Alan Wynne-Jones leading that pack. It's going to be awesome, and all eyes will be fixed on all those test matches and lead-up games. And I hope everybody who listens to this podcast will enjoy that Lions experience, because the supporters, the fans, are as much part of the British and Irish Lions as the players. And, you know, that both need each other like hand and glove. And it's a wonderful sporting environment. And I think one of the best, you know, rugby stories out there.
Well, what an absolute treat that was. What a great guy Scott is, and a really, really interesting half hour there. Hope that has whet your appetite. We have got plenty more Scottish Lions legends coming up on the podcast between now and right up and through the tour. So keep in touch with us. That's on our Twitter account, @ThistleRugbyPod. On Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. You can always send us an email. Let us know what you thought of that episode. That's thethistlerugby@gmail.com. And we're also going to be doing a series of special newsletters. That's over on Substack, the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast over there. So keep in touch with us, and we will have all of your Scottish Lions coverage throughout the summer. Thanks a lot.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.